And now we have a very special recording of Desert Island Discs from 1982. This recording was loaned to Radio Flange Goblet by the BBC as part of a ransom deal when one of our researchers found compromising pictures of David Dimbleby fucking a heron.
Hello, I'm Roy Bazalgelli, and this is Desert Island Discs. My castaway today is a writer, director, bon vivant, wanton name-dropper, and quite possibly a tribe of pygmies living in a large pink flesh sack disguised as outspoken and controversial cigar smoker Michael Winner. Hello, Michael, and welcome to Desert Island Discs.
I'm very happy to be here, Roy, and I've only eaten part of a horse, so I should stay awake long enough to tell you that story about the time that Marlon Brando and I went whelking and nearly killed Aunt Margaret with a cake fork.
So I believe when you were very young, you enjoyed shadow puppetry. Tell us all about that.
Well, it's the earliest form of movie making, isn't it, dear boy? All you need is a torch or flashlight, or, in my case, of the palatial estate in central London that I dwell in, it was a couple of Sabino Art Deco wall sconces. I'd entertain neighbourhood girls, many of them like me, flagrant draft dodgers, and throw whatever I could in front of the lights to make patterns dance along the elaborate 18th century coving. I'd use string for hair, plums for buttocks, and an old ham to imitate Churchill. Whatever I could do to get a scream of delight from a young filly. And then, without warning, like a badger after a key lime pie, I'd pounce from the top of the wardrobe.
And how old were you?
Very nearly six. Do you know, by that time I'd already directed my first gangland shooting scene using two bananas and the face of a boy nobody liked very much from a nearby orphanage for fatties. Of course, you can't call them fatties anymore because the world's gone barking mad, but back in my day you could call them anything you like, including Fatty Fatsum and the fucking fat fatties. For example, I used to call my dog Ugly Bastard, and I had a hamster once that I hit repeatedly with a hammer. Mummy said it gave her spirit.
So, and I hasten to ask this question, but what is a typical day in the Winter House?
Well, I wake up early. The wife is usually ablaze, so we have to douse her in seltzer until she's put out. And then I have my manservant, Toby, who is an absolute wonder. Completely naked, of course, save for a body-painted house dress and a novelty afro wig and clown shoes. You can see everything, even the outline of his dong. He brings me heaps and heaps and heaps of asparagus in a bucket, and I consume the lot in under 10 minutes. It truly is a sight to behold. I'm having dear boy Oliver Reed do a charcoal rendering of the whole affair to be exhibited in my house after I cork it. It's important, you see, to give back to the public. And if I know the public, what they really want is a ticket to the House of Winner, where they can see tributes to my extraordinary career, sit on a velveteen throne, and maybe get chased into the outside lavatory by Toby wielding a leg of lamb.
So, Michael, for your first record, you've chosen The Sounds of Bears Weeping. Why is that?
Well, there's nothing more majestic than a large grizzly weeping. When I was living in Vermont in the early 70s with Bobby Mitchum, Glenda Jackson and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, we befriended a bear in the woods and would all take turns riding it and dressing it up in top hats and forcing young children to have their pictures taken with it. It was untethered and as wild as David Hemmings after a few rum orgies, but we kept it relatively sedated by feeding it gobs full of Battenberg cake. We learnt our lesson, you see, after Joan Collins down near lost a nipple. She would have sued me too, but you can't sue for nipple loss in the state of Vermont due to some statute on the books put there by a governor in 1910 who had 15 of the damn things up and down his abdomen like some sort of insane cat. Anyway, when we left Vermont House, the walls caked in vomit, the roof caving in, and illicit pictures of Christina Raines everywhere, we could hear the bear weeping all the way down the mountain, dear boy. Whenever I want to get off, I still think of that hopped-up, top-hat-wearing fucking bear.
Yes. Let's hear some, shall we?
You're listening to the sweet sounds of the After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross.
Oh, hello there.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. And welcome to the After Movie Diner. And here we are in the West, at least?
West Side.
West Side.
West Side Restaurant.
West Side.
West Side. No, we can't say that.
Can we? Why not?
I don't know. We're not cool.
Oh, and because you live on the east side.
And I live on the east side.
And technically, I live on
the south side?
No, I live on the east side of Manhattan, but I live on the northwest side of Brooklyn. So I'm east of Manhattan.
East of Manhattan. East. Northwest of my heart.
East of Manhattan. Northwest of my heart. Shoo-bee-doo-boo.
Let's do that for an hour.
Yeah, let's do that for an hour. That would be better than any of our other episodes.
I still like they've got a beef burger on their diet. On their diet menu.
What do I fancy? I don't know what I fancy. Oh, they do a bison burger.
I was thinking about the bison burger. I haven't had a bison burger in a long time.
In mucho time.
Yeah, I might.
But we went to see...
The Hurricane Heist.
Do you know, I think it's actually wiped my brain. You know? I'm sitting here trying to form words.
But the thing is, you have to turn your brain off.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, oh,
I'm waiting for
so
my
nice.
Brain to reboot. Yeah, it's like an old computer.
Sometimes when you watch like crappy movies, but like, oh, it's so nice when you can turn your brain off. But this one, you had to turn your brain off in order to be able to keep watching.
Yeah.
You know, if your brain had anything to say,
yeah.
It would only say, what?
Yeah. What?
Why?
What? No, no, the, yeah.
Wait, what?
No, I, yeah. anyway, look, I tell you what it is. It's like I have to divert all my brain power to ordering. And then once I've ordered,
yes.
I can divert my yes. brain power back.
All right, so what are you thinking? What are you
the
thinking?
Task at hand.
Are you thinking?
So I'm sorry about that. It's just I cannot focus right
now.
Why
don't we get two bison burgers and then one, like, fries and gravy to share?
Well, they have a cheese fries. Do they do a cheese fries and gravy?
Oh, no, I'm sure. They're not going to kill us for ordering... Will they kill us for ordering gravy?
No.
Then let's order...
If they do, really. Not everywhere does gravy.
All right, well, I'm sure we can ask.
But I like your thinking.
Let's do that.
Because it's cheaper that way, isn't it?
No, I don't really want cheese fries. It gets a bit sloppy. Cheese fries.
Just gravy fries.
Or just fries. Fries with gravy on the side.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Just trying to help you, mate. I'm
not even kidding. Like, I'm sat here and I'm like, I'm aware I'm in a diner, I'm aware I'm looking at a menu. My brain is not, and it's not the cold. It's the movie. The movie has...
Yeah, it's made us stupider.
It has.
We can only hope the effect is temporary.
You know the hackers and the horrible, spindly, tattooed British hacker in the film with bum fluff mustache?
Yes. Thank you.
You know how he kept spouting like gibberish that meant nothing?
Yeah, how did the open sesame thing not come back to mean something?
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, how you're even asking that question, I didn't even realise that could be a thing.
But you know what I mean? It's like, that was so incongruous, it's got to mean something later.
No, nope. But the football thing was the incongruous thing that was clearly going to mean something later. That was obvious. They might as well have come out with a large fish written on the side of it that just said football thing and hit me around the head with it.
Yeah, but why?
Hang on. Oh, sorry. No, but I was saying, you know how he like spouted gibberish and stuff? I know you just said stuff, and I know that I'm looking at it, but all I'm hearing is we have to recalibrate the hair
trick. That was the greatest piece of nonsensical gibberish that meant nothing. It took up the entire scene. The scene was, it was a short scene, just him talking nonsense for 2 minutes, and then the scene cut, and it meant nothing. It was glorious.
It meant nothing. It was about as stupid as saying like 21 gigawatts or whatever it is in Back to the Future. In fact, I would have to say that the flux capacitor having to get to 88 miles an hour in order to generate the 21 gigawatts or whatever it is, that actually makes more sense to my brain than anything the wispy moustached, annoyingly English, like paisley shirted, like everything about him. Oh, you know, at the beginning of Dracula 2000, where they all come in and they're all like, we're in our hip 90s hacker gear. In this movie, like, he was wearing like hip 90s hacker gear, and I'm like, how is this guy like Johnny Lee Miller circa 1993? only if it's possible, uglier and worse.
No, Lee Miller was all right in Dracula 2000. Oh, I haven't seen Hackers.
No, but I just mean...
I have not seen Hackers.
Right. In Hackers. He's just... Yeah, this was such pish. Hurricane Heist. To be fair, you don't go to a movie...
Called the Hurricane Heist.
Not just called Hurricane Heist. The Hurricane Heist.
Hey, man. Are you guys ready? No, I think we're ready, right?
So, can I get a bison burger with cheese?
Fries?
Well done. Well, I think we're going to get like one fries.
Doing burgers, and then we're just going to get the one fries.
One fries with gravy on the side.
With gravy on the side, please. I will also have a bison burger.
With cheese.
Could I get Swiss cheese in mine?
How do you like it to be done?
Medium, please.
You want it well done, right?
Yeah.
And can I also get a little bit of bacon in mine as well? Is that possible? Great.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Tomatoes?
No.
How about you?
No, not for me. Thanks. Can I get a cup of tea? Just English breakfast.
English breakfast?
Yeah. And one fries to share and a side of gravy.
You want something to drink?
No, water's great for me.
Can I get milk with the tea? Thank you very much.
So first of all...
Wait. So
it's the Hurricane Heist.
Wait.
Why is it the and not just Hurricane Heist?
There are so many... There's bound to be so many imitators after this. Do you know what I mean? Like, after this movie.
Oh, right.
It's going to sweep the globe.
Right.
The global box office will never recover.
Is it because the first...
And afterwards be like, but wait, which Hurricane Heist is it?
Yeah.
The Hurricane,
the first one. So...
It'll be like the eighth one in the series will be Hurricane Heist.
So first off, I mean...
The next one will be Hurricane Heist 2, Tokyo Drift.
Before we...
Tokyo Wind.
It's got to be Tokyo Waft, sure.
Tokyo Waft.
It's Hurricane Heist 3, Tokyo Waft.
So, I had a realisation. It came to me.
All right.
It came to me in a flash.
Yeah.
When we asked the question, should people see this movie?
Yeah. Yes.
The answer is yes.
No, wait. Because it deserves to be a massive hit.
No, wait.
It won't be because there was three of us in the cinema. But yeah.
Wait. People should watch it. But...
Yeah. Although, to be fair, this is the preview night. Tomorrow it's only...
I have figured out how you can watch this film and for it not to be, like, painful.
All right, go ahead.
You watch it in French or Spanish or Russian. Any language.
Any other language.
Yeah. Preferably one that you don't know or understand.
No, but wait a minute. Are there English subtitles?
No.
No.
You've got to not know what's going on. Because it looks great. And the basic idea of people like rob a facility in the middle of a hurricane
and other people
try and stop them.
Yeah.
That's a great idea for a movie. It's a terrific idea for a movie.
Yeah.
Most of the effects are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Although the trailer promised a lot more than the movie delivered, let's be honest, right?
No, but what I liked about the movie was that it had a nice... Especially the whole sequence where they were trying to bring down the cell tower.
Yeah.
Had a nice whiff of, like, 50s B-movie about it. The way the set was, and the way that it was an old theatre. And, like, the way he shot the tower coming down with the lighting.
I was saying that I'm enjoying this.
But
I just wish I didn't understand what they were saying.
Right, exactly.
Because it's so... I mean, I almost feel privileged, genuinely. Is that mine? Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
I almost feel privileged, genuinely. I heard the worst script that's ever been written.
No. It was really bad. No, people have to understand, right? That... Okay, so we need to
sure,
back up.
I'm sorry.
No.
Sorry.
Because no, I'm the same, because I want to dive into all the things we have to say about the film. I do. No, because people have to know. But it's imperative. It's absolutely imperative. But what you have to, I have to back up, because I'm trying to find ground zero of where this all begins. And it begins with the boardroom meeting that happened in order for this movie to exist, right? Because on one hand, you have we're going to sell it like it's the Fast and Furious meets Twister or meets whatever. Pick your disaster movie, the day after tomorrow.
No, I think they're probably Twister, right? Yeah,
right?
That makes sense.
So, it is almost the, you run an algorithm of like box office success, and you come up with like disaster movies and Fast and Furious.
Well, there was a thing that I read the autobiography of Joe Esterhaus, right?
Right.
The guy that wrote Basic Instinct and
Showgirls
and all that.
Yeah.
And he said he did a thing where he took the like top 10 grossing movies of the last 20 years or something.
Yeah.
And he threw them in a hat, and he would take them out like randomly and pair them together. So you'd be like, I don't know, Get It On versus Reservoir Dogs. So you'd have like a bunch of cheerleaders pulling off a violent heist where they all turn on each other, right? And I think they even made that movie. But like, so that's what you would do. So with this, it's like, you pull out Twister and the Fast and the Furious. It's like, okay, so they're pulling off a high-speed heist in the middle of a hurry.
Right.
And that's sure. Like the algorithm is, you stick the two things together, Bob's your
totally.
Sorry.
No, I just want to make sure we're definitely...
We don't want to miss this, mate.
No, it's gold.
This is like, I feel like we're smuggling it. You know, like we're smuggling out, you know what I mean? The information, like the little known film. It'll be shut down. It's so entertaining.
Yeah.
It'll be shut down after tonight. And they're talking in hushed tones.
So what's odd then is, okay, so then you go, the next step on their road to global domination with this movie is that some bright spark goes
at Entertainment Pictures
there was like 500 production companies like the beginning of the movie was literally Entertainment Pictures in association with
everybody we Films. Met last night at that party
Jeff Films in conjunction with Alan Pictures like it was literally so it just went on.
Bunch of really, really fat, greasy guys with really big sunglasses.
Yeah. Well,
this is offices in LA.
This is the movie they wake up the next morning after a jacuzzi party full of crack or something, and they wake up the next morning and find out
chipping out the cocaine from the jacuzzi jets.
They wake up with their face like stuck to. Yeah. It's great. Thank you.
Oh, magic. Terrific. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Would you like some mayonnaise, mustard?
Some bacon.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mustard, mayonnaise?
No, I'm good.
No, I'm all right. Thanks, man.
That's great. So, the next one, they wake up, right, and stuck to their faces is the contract that they've all signed in blood. And then, where they've, like, signed away their child schooling or something to this idea, right?
What did I buy into last night?
Yeah, right. So the next step on the road to like success, as I said, is that there's a bunch of directors who've worked on the Fast and Furious franchise, right? Until they stuck with Justin Lin after the third one through to the sixth or seventh one, I think, and then they went to F. Gary Gray or F. Gray Gary, forget his name.
Okay,
F. Glenn Gary Glenn Ross.
Gary.
F. Gary Gary. Why two Garys? and they were like, let's try and get one of the directors of the Fast and Furious franchise, because then this truck is rolling, you know what I mean? Then we're off. So they must have approached everyone else first before they got to Rob Cohen.
Rob. I started it all.
Rob Cohen, who did the first...
I prop up a bar in Las Vegas somewhere telling everybody. Do you know I directed the first Fast and... Fast and Furious. You heard of Fast and Furious.
That's great, man. Thank you.
I did the first one.
first one. No one's talking about Rob Cohen, do they? No one's asking Rob Cohen to make a Star Trek movie. The first one.
I love that.
No one's asking Rob Cohen to make a Star Trek movie.
So they finally get round to Rob Cohen, and they're like, it doesn't matter, mate, because on the poster we can put from the director of The Fast and the Furious. And that's probably where the V in Hurricane Heist comes from, because they're like, the first one was...
How do we make it look more like The Fast and the Furious?
The first one was called The Fast and the Furious. So they're like, okay, then we go with that. So now you've got... Like, this is the story that leads up to this.
Hurricane and the Heisties?
No, right.
Can't, no.
So, do you want any bacon, Chief?
No, you take it, mate.
There's a whole piece here for you, have it.
What?
Yeah, of course. Oh,
thanks, man.
So, I don't know. I would almost like to look up at this point what the budget of the film was. Because at some point, it falls somewhere between a medium budgeted action movie of like 50 mil maybe and the Sharknado movies. Like, it falls somewhere in between. It's not as B-movie CGI heavy as the Sharknado movies,
right.
And it's not as slick, and there aren't enough stars for it to be like the $60 million action movie.
But there's definitely sets, aren't there? I was thinking a bit when he's like floating away from the mall,
but also
that's gotta be a set, right?
Also, I'm telling you, 90% of the people in this were not American. The accents were all over the place. I'm betting, and we're going to look it up in a minute.
No,
it's either filmed in like Eastern Europe and like Bulgaria somewhere, or it's filmed on like the Isle of Man or something, because everyone had suspiciously like English accents.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you can always tell, can't you? Because in the credits at the end, had US casting by and UK casting by, which means a significant amount of it was UK. They don't mention that for just like two guys.
Right, I'm looking it up now. I'm telling you, it's probably an Isle of Man movie.
Well, it could be Bulgaria, because my friend Richard, who is in The Alienist,
yeah,
that was filmed in Bulgaria.
Right.
And like, they got him because presumably he was nearby.
Yeah. Oh, no, there are actors who live in Sofia, Bulgaria, who are, like, expat Americans who are in, like, hundreds of movies. Because whenever they roll into town and they need, like, cabbie number two...
Wow.
I need to look it up, though.
Okay.
I want to look up the budget. Okay. I called it. The budget was 35 mil.
There you go.
Somewhere between Sharknado, which I'm guessing is probably around 5 to 10 mil, especially by the time they got to the fifth one. And a $50-60 million, like Jason Statham starring vehicle, like the Mechanic 2.
$60 million, really?
Would probably be around 50, 60
million.
That's
crazy. I think that would be more like, I don't know, it should be like 5. I have no conception of money. No idea what things cost.
So, okay. It's interesting, actually, because the trivia says that the award-winning novel Storm Crashers by Richard Wycliffe was optioned by one of the big six studios after his unique concept of a high-tech heist during a hurricane was shopped all over Los Angeles. This movie and at least two other similar projects were planned shortly thereafter. So that doesn't mean that this is based on it. That kind of means that they went, oh, that's a really great idea. Let's like... backdoor it and steal it.
That's disgraceful. That means there is a good movie, and there's a good version of this movie that was in development and got canned because they did everything faster.
Filming locations: Bulgaria, Sofia, Bulgaria, Vacarel, Bulgaria.
Yeah.
I knew it.
Well, nowhere else. They go, listen, we need a bad guy, we need a name. What about David Brent's friend from The Office? That's all I know him from.
Oh, Ralph Ineson?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Maggie Grace, that's the main woman, and Ryan Quanten, who is actually Australian, but everyone knows him as the Southern Hick from True Blood. And Maggie...
Who's Maggie Grace?
Maggie Grace is the whiny daughter from the Taken movies, who was actually considerably more watchable in this than in Taken. And considering how not watchable she was in this, that tells you what I feel about her in Taken.
Right.
Toby Kebbell, I have no idea who that is.
Oh, yeah. He's from Yorkshire. So the main guy is from Yorkshire.
Oh, I knew I'd recognise him from somewhere. Why did they give them, like, really dumb Alabama accents to do, though?
Right. I mean, it's... I suppose because they're like, well, you know, storms happen in the US, right? Or I suppose they think that if you set this movie in any other country...
Well, nobody gives a shit about a Bulgarian hurricane.
No, no. I mean, I wouldn't set it in Bulgaria, but you might want to set it in, like, I don't know, the UK or France or whatever.
Yeah, the hurricane's never going to get that strong, are they? Maybe it's because whenever English people try to do American accents, they want to do a ridiculous Alabama accent.
But I knew it. Like, I would almost go on with... I would bet Maggie Grace is the only actual American in this movie.
That's conceivable.
But you see how you're able, like, for 35 mil, the production values, once you get rid of a name cast,
yeah,
and once you get rid of filming in the States, the production values can go through the roof.
Well, they've definitely bought sets, like all of them.
I mean, the CGI storm at the end was not particularly convincing, but it was convincing. Like, it was enough. Like, you got it. You understood what was going on.
It was fine, but I, the reason I'm disappointed by the hurricane storm thing at the end is that in the trailer, it looked like the beginning of a big sequence. It was like the big thing it was building up to. And in the end, it just sucked a truck or two backwards, and that was it. There was no real...
Right. So, having unpacked all that and figured that all out...
Right.
Filmed in Bulgaria, budget of 35 mil, 99% of the cast were English.
Yeah.
And it's directed by Rob Cohen, who I think his last film was... Didn't he do the Girl Next Door? No, the Boy Next Door, the Jennifer Lopez movie.
I have no idea.
I'm almost certain that's
the last... I thought
he
did...
I'm certain that's the last movie he did.
Not the Ryan... The Rock... Disaster one.
Rob Cohen did San Andreas.
I thought he maybe did.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Can you look it up? I don't want to use my phone again.
Yeah, I can look it up.
So now, let's try and dig into the movie. So, the interesting thing about the film, or rather the perplexing thing about the film, or rather just the...
One of the many perplexing things.
One of the awful things about the film... Is there's kind of literally no introduction.
No, there is none.
Like, there's no build-up. There's
the
no...
standard... They don't even... What's weird about it is that their whole, you know... the whole reason of having a flashback, like, in a cheesy action film, especially to, like, the two main characters' childhood, is presumably it's going to depict... Well, it does, in fact, depict a traumatic event by which they are both scarred. And at no point do either of them, like, really... like face that whatever that moment is. Do you know what I mean? It's like
you missed the weighty dialogue in the truck where they said that they were sorry, and then they both went, hey, let's make a deal, let's never share our feelings again.
Like, the dialogue was so abysmal. But what I mean is
the dialogue was staggering. Like, the dialogue was
it was so laughably bad. No, it was worse. It was bits when you're like going, okay, here comes the cheesy pun. Like, after they get sucked up into the air on the end of the ropes and then come back in the... There's a bit where, like, she turns... Like, they crash back to the ground. They've gone through the whole thing. And she turns to him. You're like, here comes the cheesy joke. And then there's just, like, a moment of silence. And then they cut. You couldn't even come up with a half-decent, rubbish, wind-related fucking pun.
Right.
Come on! What are we doing here?
When I was thinking earlier that I wanted you to blow me, this is not what I meant.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Anything. Literally anything. But then we go, there's a bit of dialogue where they go, oh, what's in this peanut butter sandwich? Jif? No, that's actually, I'm more of a Skippy guy. Yeah, but it's Smucker strawberry jam, right? Right on the money. That's not even like a writing exercise.
No.
You know what I mean? That is so... devoid of talent and imagination, that you should never be able to write anything, not even a shopping list, right? You should, all pens and pencils should be taken from you, right? Your fingers should be removed so you can never type anything. And your nose, right? And you should be stuck in some kind of Bulgarian cinema museum, right? As
what happens when you give Americans money.
Right. I don't know.
In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there's like.
No. I think it was.
You know,
written,
like in Big Train when they have like the kids like writing the puns for the DJ. If they have like Bulgarian, do you know what I mean? Like ex circus clowns or something that are out of business since the circus, you know, collapsed or whatever.
Right.
And now they're in a room. Even,
listen, I wouldn't go as far as to blame Bulgarians. I
think it's unemployed
kind of
Bulgarian circus clowns wrote this film. That's the only explanation that makes sense to me.
No. No, because I think that's unfair to unemployed Bulgarian circus clowns, because I feel like they at least would have included a lot of, like, clowning and or clown-related subject matter.
Did you notice they tried to add jokes in? They're like ADR jokes in.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, I remember I was just dreaming about that biology teacher I had when I was a kid. I didn't learn anything, but I wasn't late for that class. And he turns around, and off camera... You hear the guy, the blatantly ADR joke, going, yeah, I seem to remember you being interested in her biology. Yes, that was the joke. It just literally happened. And somebody got paid for that.
Yeah.
And they went, yeah, that's a good one. Let's ADR that in.
Yeah.
I don't even blame the writers for that. That's like, no, we need more jokes.
I can sum up Hurricane Heist in one scene. I can sum up the writing.
Yes.
Of Hurricane Heist in one scene. There is a scene in this movie, and this is absolutely 150% true. You won't believe me until you go see the movie, but this actually happens in the movie. So, our main guy, Blandy McNorthenson, and Maggie Grace are in a...
Now think about it. He couldn't look any more like he's from Yorkshire.
Right, are in a... They wish this was the car/tank that they have in Fast and Furious Mobile. Right. They have a whole rough and tumble with a couple of people who are trying to get Maggie Grace because she knows the code to some vault with money in it. After the rough and tumble has happened and they've got away, they're in like a parking lot area, like a mall parking lot area. They pull the car over, right? I can't honestly believe that I witnessed this.
It was so weird.
But they both get out of the car and, like, run to separate pillars while, like, very obviously undoing their trousers, right? He's like, oh, I've been desperate for it. She's like, yeah, all this water, right? They then both piss. They both take a bath. Look, she does and he does behind pillars. And while they're doing that, they start to talk about the plot.
Yeah.
While they're both urinating. That is a scene in this movie that someone... And you know why it's in this movie? It's because whoever wrote this was like, you know the scene that I've never... Like, everyone always says, like, you know, Jack Bauer never takes a shit, but it's meant to be 24 hours or whatever it is. Like, there's always that thing where you're like, oh, it's an action movie, it's in the middle of a heist, and no one desperately needs a piss. Wouldn't it be great if in the middle of this movie... We do that scene that no one ever does. And I'm like, there's a reason why no one ever does it, mate. Because it's creepy, weird, and just like... We literally all looked around, the four of us in the cinema. It was Jim and me, there was a woman behind us and a guy off to your left. We all looked at each other and were like, what is it we're watching? Is this happening? Am I on candid camera? I thought any minute now that Ashton Kutcher was going to show up and I was going to have to hit somebody.
Probably Ashton Kutcher.
No, definitely Ashton Kutcher. Like, if Ashton Kutcher showed up right now, I'd hit him. Like, that goes without saying. I'm just saying that was...
But I also think...
There was a scene where your two leading people, they don't kiss... They piss.
But weirdly,
that happens in
but
this
now
movie.
That I think about it, that is also, it's like the Smucker's peanut butter scene. And it's like the weird bit, you know, he goes like,
what, horribly pissed joke?
Have you got the girl? Yeah, I got her here. I'll tie it up with a red ribbon. Well, that's not a thing. Also, there's no red ribbons anywhere, but okay, fine, whatever. And then like, he loses her, and the car drives up, and the door flies open and the guy goes, red ribbon my ass. He goes, shut up. And you're thinking, that and the peanut butter thing and the pissing scene are all like, we've looked at this script and it's abysmal. There's no jokes in it. There's nothing. We start filming tomorrow, unemployed Bulgarian circus clowns. Write me jokes. But you can't change the plot.
Right.
Right? And you can fiddle with the dialogue a bit.
Right.
But that's it. So that's why it's all like weird, like, oh, what about a scene where they talk about the sandwiches they're eating? And also, who the fuck keeps a week's worth of sandwiches
in a car?
In a car? Because, like, by the time you get to Sunday, it's going to be gross.
Right.
It's going to be a gross, hard, horrible, diesel-infused fucking sandwich.
Right. So, if that isn't, if all those examples aren't enough, there's no setup, right? So
no,
we've...
Literally, no. Which, actually, I quite appreciated.
So did I. But there's no, like...
Oh, you're forgetting the conversation on the iPad where we find out her entire backstory, where in classic never ever do this screenwriting course, where two characters who know each other tell them things about their own past.
No, but that was the thing.
And like Utah, back in Utah. We never find out what the fuck happened in Utah. For all we know, she could have pulled the gun out and shot her own mum in the head. Right. There's no detail.
No.
I took my eye off the ball and somebody died. Did you shoot your mum in the head? Yes, I did.
No. I made the wrong decision in Utah. sounds so... Because that could literally be anything. She goes, the only thing we know about Utah in mysterious cloudy smoke. Utah. The only thing we know about it is that she made a bad decision and someone lost their lives. Doesn't say who lost their lives or what the decision was, but we presume the decision was to put bullets in a gun and shoot her mother's face off. That's the decision.
Like a euphemism, like it's what people in the ATF say, where they're like, shoot an unarmed guy running away from them. What happened? Bad call in Utah.
I made the wrong decision in Utah.
In fact, now think about it, it's an excellent name for a band. The Wrong Decision in Utah is a great name for a band.
There's also a disgusting sex way to look at it as well.
But we never know.
We never know.
It's like her whole character is based on this mistake that
she
made
could
in
be
Utah.
A hermaph-
we have no idea what
she
it is.
She could be a hermaphrodite, and she could know a barmaid called Utah, and accidentally one night she made a mistake while in Utah. I mean, the possible... I have to say this for the screenwriters. They've left it open to interpretation.
All the best ones do, mate.
All the best ones do. I remember Hitchcock saying that, actually. He's like, if you could be vague and twatty, be...
Now that I think about it, I think the best way is... You know when you have, like, a really stinky poo, right? Like, really stinky. And you come out of the room, like, waving. And you go, what happened? I made a bad decision in Utah.
And someone lost their life.
Next time it happens, I'm going to come out of the loo, yeah, wafting, and go, oh, I made a bad decision in Utah.
It also sounds like a Johnny Cash lyric, but...
It does.
But like a Johnny Cash lyric that he wrote down and went, nah, and then scratched out.
Yeah.
Because I shot a man in Reno is a much better line. But anyway, so...
That's the setup.
So the movie starts, right? And I... So what's interesting is if you have a poor script like this, but you also don't have any like stars to hang your hat on,
no charisma.
Well, no, it's not that. It's the fact that there is no, like, at the beginning of the movie, there are just people doing stuff, and it's not like.
I just realized I never got my tea. Oh. That's fine. I'm quite happy to have it now.
It's not like, you know, like at the beginning of your coat and everything's falling.
Oh, thanks, man.
You know at the beginning of, like, White House Down, right?
Yeah.
It's almost the same setup in the sense that...
Sorry. Can I get a cup of tea? Yeah, thank you. With milk, English breakfast. Thank you.
You know at the beginning, right? So yeah. you get the flashback, right?
Right.
And the president's first lady dies, right?
Yeah.
And he gets bumped down to... whatever
he made a bad
it is,
decision, didn't you,
patrol cop or whatever he gets bumped down to. He's in the financial department or something. Like, he gets moved sideways.
Yeah.
Like, the president realizes it's not really his fault, but at the same time, he can't bear look at him, right?
Yes, that's right.
And then you get the present day, right, and you get him like joshing about in the kitchen with his girlfriend, so you know that she's da 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 da, and they're expecting a baby.
Thank
like,
you very much. Thank you.
There's that bit, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then they show up at a cafe, and Angela Bassett shows up, and she fills in a bit more of the backstory and what happened,
yeah.
and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Like it just
screenwriting. Right, yeah.
No, but what I'm saying is,
no, I know what you mean, yeah.
10 minutes in,
yeah.
When the
you know where you are, who's who,
right?
Where we're going,
and you know it's Gerard Butler, and you yeah. know like that's Mihiro, and whatever yeah. happens now, where the Koreans blow up or whatever, like this is the like this yeah. is the guy I'm following. Like whatever happens now,
yeah.
There's a thing. So it's not clear in this film till almost 30 minutes in, like who the gang is we're following. Like it ends up being Maggie Grace, your man from Yorkshire, and True Blood dude.
Right.
Like, they're the... Right. Who, by the way, True Blood dude, Ryan Kwanten, is playing a alcoholic ex-army generator repairman, right? Your man from Yorkshire is playing a meteorologist who literally...
The best like, meteorologist... There is.
The very best. To the point where...
Do not get better than him. Yeah. Thank you very much.
To the point where he can predict a storm and the size of a storm and what a storm is going to do.
Just by looking at it.
He doesn't even look at the storm.
No, the storm hasn't happened yet. He's looking at a sky. He's looking at the storm is going to be in.
What's hilarious is, there's no indication. Because I have eyes. And I've seen skies before. There's literally no indication, right? All the equipment is like, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be a category one, maybe. He's like, it's going to be the biggest thing we've ever seen. We're like, there's literally no indication for that, mate. But all right. He turns out to be right. Even though people are walking about in it as if, not only that, but firing guns in it, which is just even more bizarre because the bullets would just be going everywhere. Like... Yeah, I mean, we'll dissect that in a minute, because that whole, like, shootout at the Hurricane Karate is madness. But it does lead to probably the best sequence in the movie, which is the flying of
That was pretty good.
The hubcap disc.
By the way, can we just point out that the very last line of the movie...
Yeah.
How long do you think they spent debating on whether there was a Shepherd's Delight joke to be made? Because the bit where he looks at me and goes, red sky at night, and there's this really long pause. You go, is somebody going to say Shepherd's Delight? Because that's so weird. It's like the last line of the movie. Because I honestly thought that someone's going to go, Shepherd's Delight, and then that would be like the end of the movie. You know what I mean? It was that weird.
But then she goes, do they teach you that at PhD school?
And they all collapse in hysterics.
Which, by the way, PhD school is not a thing.
And what's he been taught? Red Sky at Night. He doesn't even know what it is. He doesn't even finish yet.
He does,
they teach you half a phrase at PhD school.
Yeah, he does know that. You can, though, while in the eye of the largest hurricane that has ever hit North America on the history of that, you can apparently outdrive it. He has learned that.
Oh, yeah, they just... What?
The storm just disappears.
Can we get to the point?
Anyway, hang on. So, the beginning is so... Like, the problem with the... The problem with the beginning being so vague,
right.
and just the case of, well, I guess these people are showing up. Wait a minute, who's that? Oh, they're those people. All right. Is because you have no personalities or actors to hang your preconceived notions on.
Right.
You're having to do, like, a lot of guesswork. But then there's also all these bits where, like, people we've just met, like, we haven't even got a chance to know them, double-cross people we've also just met. And I'm like, this has no weight to anything.
Yeah. Characters die.
Right.
After a line of dialogue they had 20 minutes before and we're supposed to care. Like,
right.
His girlfriend dies.
What about... No. Wait a minute. What about this? When she rocks up... Okay, so... Maggie Grace is an ATF agent.
Yeah.
And they
that,
are...
That, by the way, only becomes apparent...
Wait,
an hour and 20 minutes into the film where she mentions she worked for the ATF. I know it's like a big thing, but I'm like, is she Treasury? Marshall? ATF? FBI?
Why would ATF be dumping money? That's like
I'm sure they do.
Firearms.
I'm sure they do. I have no idea. Literally not.
Did she say ATF? Is
yes,
that what she said?
Pretty sure she said ATF.
Anyway. Her job is to drive large trucks full of old money to a federal disposal site where they mulch it or they grind it, whatever they do. And there's about 600 million old notes in this place because the shredder is on the fritz. And then we find out, oh, the bad guy has made the shredder go on the fritz, so there'd be even more money. Even though if the shredder went on the fritz, you wouldn't just keep bringing money there. You would take money to another location.
Or you'd fix the shredder.
You'd fix the shredder immediately.
What you wouldn't do before is call in two guys, one of whom is obviously a stripper,
right,
and the other one has weirdly, like, obviously prison tattoo hands.
Right.
Going, oh, yeah, they said, you stay here while we sort out this, you know, heist that's happening.
Right.
Stay in the bulletproof.
And it's a mechanical shredder, but they come in with laptops and start clacking away on it, and no one goes, can you just, I don't know, get down there and pull out the dead raccoon or whatever it is that's jamming up the shredder. Like, I'm pretty sure the shredder doesn't work on, like, computer magic. It's a shredder. It has cogs and shit.
You press a button, then it goes around.
Right. So all that's very weird, but... So the whole plan is, but again, as you kind of find this out in a very vague way, is that she has an iPad conversation with a guy we never see again. Like, just some guy on the other end of an iPad, right?
Who's, like, in the middle of doing something. He's not, like, in an office or something. He's, like,
no,
outside doing something. Right. What's he doing? Where is he?
Are they
going to turn up later?
Yeah,
nope. We just decided to film him outside.
Yeah, doing stuff.
Can we get an office for the scene where he does that? We can't get an office, Rob. What do you want to do? Just film him outside in the field.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Wave it around a bit.
I wouldn't be surprised if that actor is also one of the quote unquote army guys who are just like a vague bunch of people
who are completely forgotten about.
Completely forgotten about. But so
they didn't even go back for them. It's like,
no,
we'll leave them locked up in that electrified fence in the middle of a Category 6 hurricane where nobody's coming to save them and there is no food or water.
Yeah. So they're all dead. Yeah. So. She shows up, and then there's, like, weird tension with the suit, not the army guy or the federal guy, but, like, the suit
that's so weird.
Who runs this facility.
That's so weird.
Right? The suit who is, like, I don't know, Jeff Wall Street? Like, he's just a very kind of vague... I'll put him in a purple shirt and sit him behind a desk. What's his job?
Give him a goatee and a purple shirt.
Nobody knows. Yeah, goatee and a purple shirt, it'd be fine. So there's weird, like, did they have a relationship? Did they used to work together? They still work together. Like, what is going
on? He's like, it's a cocktail and blah, blah, blah. She goes, you'd know all about cocktails. Don't accuse me of being a drunk, right? In front of federal... We don't know where these people are from.
I mean, I should know, but I don't, clearly, because I just let them in with that.
Hey, have free computer access to the money storage facility, despite the fact that your credentials are, oh, yeah, I've got a laptop and some tattoos. Will that get me in?
Yeah.
Come in with your stripper girlfriend.
Also, like... Why was any of that relevant? Because...
There was no reason for them to be there. Those two characters.
Also... We never see him take a drink. So, like, if he's meant to be, like, an alcoholic and his facility gets taken over...
No, I'm telling you, that was one of the added jokes. In the line, it was originally... Because it was, like, a fairly straight-ahead line. Like, it's, a, you know, the perfect cocktail of trouble or whatever. Like, it wasn't. It was just, like, a throwaway thing.
Right.
And in the unemployed Bulgarian clown...
They went, how about we make it a vague...
We better do a joke about cocktail. Like, this,
right.
We've got to have something here. There's got to be something here.
Yeah.
And they did a joke about, well, you know all about cocktails. And then they don't bother coming back to it. The whole thing is, like, just, we'll get back to it. And then they never do.
It's such
so many bad decisions in Utah. Man. They're all bad decisions in Utah.
This movie should be called The Hurricane Heist: A Bad Decision in Utah.
So that'll be the second film. It'll be the prequel.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When they reboot it, which is an inevitability
it's
in 20 years. Do you know what I mean?
You see, the
bringing
thing
back
is,
Maggie Grace.
The thing is, all right, look, there are so many inconsistencies we could sit here all day and have a go at them. The truth of the matter is, though, is that
It is quite fun.
No, it's a lot of fun. And the reason why I would say yes, go see it
in Russian.
Is first of all, I want 10 of these movies, like quite happily, because with each new one, they'll have a bigger budget. They'll be able to actually get like Statham will star in the Hurricane Heist 5. Like that'll happen.
You know, they're bound to have like come across one Bulgarian clown that could knock out a gag by then.
Right, exactly.
Crisis of elimination.
Even Statham could come up with a couple of lines, I'm sure. He'd be like, ugh, well, that puts the wind up me, or something like that. Yeah.
I've put the wind up her.
Yeah.
I've got the wind in my sails.
Right?
That would be fine.
The bar is that low.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything. If someone, like, even with the dude who shows up in the boat to save his brother, even if he's like, oh, you put the wind in my sails, even though the boat didn't have sails, even that would have at least been a line. I'm about to choke on a frick. My excitement for the movie knows no bounds. The reason why I brought up Sharknado earlier is this. This is a notch above Sharknado because it's not played in a knowing way.
No.
I mean, at all. So it's not played in a knowing way.
They are trying to make like a Fast and Furious movie. Buddy, get together.
Right. But it's utterly tone deaf. And it's full of amazing things like your man from The Office, Brent's best friend from The Office, saying like, damn you all to hell! Things like that, which is amazing.
I love the bit where he shoots the guy, the purple goatee suit man.
Yeah.
Right? He's got what he wants, he's got the money, right?
He's got the money!
He shoots purple shirt, and then he turns to him and goes, bring her with us. I'm not done with her yet. You mean you couldn't think of a reason why you can't kill her? Because there's literally no reason why you should just put a bullet in her head.
Right.
But we'll bring her with us. They don't even bother to come up with like some half-assed, yeah, she'll make a good hostage, or just literally anything. They can't even be bothered with that.
Right.
I bet it pained him to not come up with a good reason.
Right.
But I do agree that the damn you all to hell line was great. And he basically did spend most of the movie. He got changed.
Halfway through.
Like, why did he get...
He got changed so that when it... No, he got changed three times. Because he was in his gear at the beginning.
Right.
The uniform at the beginning.
Why would you want combat gear when you're on a heist? Get rid of that.
Get rid of that. Then he's slinking around the office in an orange leather jacket and a casual shirt.
It was quite flappy. It was like,
right.
When did you get changed to a flappy leather jacket?
And then next time, when he goes out into the storm, he's wearing like I'm a gunslinger from the old west, like long coat and a big hat. And he was like, anyway, look, fair play to him, because after The Office, you know.
No, I'd grab him in both hands, mate.
If someone came to you, if you've been in like the fourth wheel in a British sitcom.
He wasn't even that, he was like a... barely a guest star in two episodes. I'm serious. Like, he's memorable because he's got like a deep voice and he's like quite a memorable character. But it's like...
Okay, so if you were Jeff Cameo from The Office...
Right.
And someone came to you and went, do you want to play like the grizzled fourth lead? Or like the lead bad guy in a Fast and Furious...
How many outfits do I get to wear? I'm only going to do it. Bare minimum, a two outfit challenge.
I would imagine... His contract was this. I get some money on the back end, because he probably presumes this is going to be a hit, which, by the way, it won't be. It should be, though, but it won't be a hit. It won't be. There were four people in the theatre tonight, and I understand it's like the night before. But if this was... I'm betting that the Thursday before the first Fast and Furious came out, I'm betting there were more than four people in the cinema to see that. And that was before Vin Diesel or Paul Walker or any of those people were even big stars.
I would just like to say that this is exactly the kind of movie... I mean, I know it's not like Nick Cage or John Cusack based on it, but blatantly this is going to die in a week.
Right.
It'll be gone.
Oh, God, if it had Cusack and Cage in it...
Oh,
it would have been so good.
Cusack is the back... No... Cage.
Yeah, no.
Although I'll be honest, I quite liked his like gravel voiced absurdity.
You keep
saying damn you all the hell.
Because the best bit was when at the very end, and it would pain me to actually explain what's going on here, but basically there are three trucks and the storm is barreling down on them. You really don't need to know much more than that. But, like, they do some big football move, which is this horribly contrived horseshit from the very beginning of the movie that you're like, oh, when's that going to come back and rear its bland and uninteresting head? Thank you so much.
Well, by the way, is that it's a huge mystery.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, wow, you're doing a move where you're blocking him and you're not letting him get by. He goes, yeah, I can't wait till he figures that out. What do you mean, until he figures it out?
Yeah.
You're blocking him
yeah.
and he can't get by. That's literally what's happening.
No, but this was the best thing ever. This was my favorite. He, at one point, the three of them are all in the cab of the truck. They race on there. They go, I wish I could see his face
yeah.
when he figures it out. It then cuts to the, like, you know, hangdog, tombstone, long-nosed face of this guy. And I can just imagine Rob Cohen behind the camera going, now, give us a face like you just figured it out, but you're really angry about it. And he does this, like, girding, grizzled, like...
Right.
He just does, like, five expressions all at once. And then they dump
it. And the Pacific Cohen went, nailed it.
Nailed it. Well, that was... Remember at the beginning, the man from Yorkshire, I'm just the meteorologist, the weather dude, the guy who
Dr. Yorkshire.
Dr. Jeff Yorkshire. Who is literally the most average man who has ever existed. He's Angus McAvoy.
He could be like a walk-on, like one-line man in Emmerdale Farm. That's what he could be.
I wouldn't even put him in Emmerdale. Like, he's not even Emmerdale level. He's in, like, the Channel 5 in the 90s knockoff of Emmerdale.
What was that? Yeah, there was, like, a Channel 5 soap opera.
They had
right?
a Channel 5 soap opera.
We're launching a channel. We need a soap opera. Make one up now.
It was El Dorado.
That was BBC One. BBC One was El Dorado.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was. I can't remember what the Channel 5... But Channel 5 was, like, Family Circle Joust or something.
Family Circle
Joust. That's a bit porny.
It's a family soap opera, but set in the many evil times. And to solve common household misunderstandings, they have to ride round and round with a giant jousting stick. That makes sense. Each week, if we have to lose a family member, at least it's fair.
Not Dr. Jeff Yorkshire. Yeah, he's got a film deal. He's off. See you later, suckers. You went to see me for dust after Hurricane Ice blows the doors off the action genre.
There was moments at the beginning of the movie when he was like... Before he just... By the way, this is a guy who is like a PhD in meteorology, so he's bound to be one of the most boring people on the planet because no one cares about the weather at all. Even weathermen do not care about the weather.
No, there's very few sexy weathermen out there.
And
I should know, I've looked.
But at the end of the movie, he's jumping about on trucks without any harnessing, like running along, like... There are trucks barreling along an uneven roadway with a class 6 hurricane storm barreling down on them, and he is running along the trucks like he's, I don't know, doing ballet on a... Like, it's crazy.
It is.
And he's a... Like, one line of... Like, it's like a Statham film. One line of dialogue clears it up. Oh, yeah, he's a meteorologist now, but he used to be an assassin. Like, one line, like, whatever it is.
He used to be really good at, the Alabama sport of truck jumping. Because we're Bulgarian circus clowns, for all we know. That's how they spend all their time in Alabama.
Right, but that's the thing. Like, at least with Ryan Quanten, or whatever his name is, they bothered to...
Yeah, he used to be in the army.
He used to be... No, he was in Afghanistan for a spell.
We've got no idea why he was in Afghanistan.
Right.
And he could have been repairing... Apparently, he's the only generator man. So there was like a generator so went down.
A generator goes down and they're like, don't kill him. He's the only person who can fix this generator. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure most people...
And I thought that was like part of the heist, no? Like, what? The generator went down coincidentally?
Yeah. They thought they had a backup generator and it blew.
Oh.
So then they had to get the only man
yeah.
Fortunately, he hadn't evacuated with everyone else. Because everyone else in the evacuated.
Fortunately, he's a drunk who's only been around for 5 years since he got back from Afghanistan.
Right.
But in that 5 years, he's become indispensable to the US Treasury. and getting pissed in a small garage also, in a forgotten town in Alabama.
Also, what kind of facility is this? Their generator and their shredder and everything else just keeps collapsing on it.
No, leave it.
Leave it. Yeah. I've got an idea, Mr. Secretary. We need like a big federal building where we can get rid of all the money. It's going to have a lot of like high tech equipment in it and a big vault and everything like that. I got just the place. Let's build it far away from anyone who can fix anything. Because despite us having $600 million in this place, let us not put it near any repair guys.
Do not.
Let's not stuff it with anyone who knows how to fix a fucking
Make it a place that's easy to isolate.
Yeah.
Cut off lines of communication and people can be in and out before we know what's happening.
Yeah.
That's the ideal location.
Yeah. However, all that being said,
I
it is
once I stopped listening to what people were saying,
right.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, the biggest problem with the movie is the script by absolute.
Yeah, fun. Just the things that people say.
Right.
The things that come out of their mouths.
This cast,
everything else.
This cast and this director and this plot could and do in many areas.
Yeah, they could have made it work.
A fun now. Yeah. What you have to be aware of, obviously they're selling it a lot like a Fast and Furious movie. This is a B movie. This is not, like, this isn't even a, you know, Gone in 60 Seconds, Nick Cage. Like, this is a B movie. This is a filmed on an American set in Bulgaria thing. Like, this is one notch above Sharknado. And I'm not exaggerating.
No.
Now, it's a good B movie.
The only reason
Thing that it lacks is that if you look at something like Big Trouble in Little China or, even Independence Day or Twister or any of those movies, forget Big Trouble. Like, you look at these movies that are like, built on a B premise, right? And even all the cheesy stuff, even, like, Bill Pullman being like, this is our Independence Day or whatever it is, right? Or Randy Quaid, like, flying into the alien with, like, oh, boys, I'm back. Like, it's all cheesy hoke and whack. Like, none of it is, like, you know, Oscar
but
fucking
the
wild.
One thing,
but
sorry.
It's part of the enjoyable cliche of a good disaster B-movie is expecting stuff like that. It's expecting Dennis Quaid to show up and be grizzled and, you know, use his chin to chisel ice out of the library so he can get to his son. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you expect all this stuff, right? You expect people who are going to give up their lives for no good reason when they could easily go with him and instead just, like, I've got to, you know, stay here for Queen and Country or whatever it is. Like, you expect all this garbage to happen. And the problem with this movie is that
none of the garbage happens.
Well, all the garbage happens, but none of it is explained or...
it's not tied to anything.
It's not tied to anything. It's not explained, and it's not... there's no button on it. So, like, normally, you have, like, setup, payoff, button. Like, you have the... Like, a good example would be the shopping mall sequence, which is, like, woefully misguided because it really doesn't do anything or lead anywhere. But essentially... because it doesn't even get the brother back, because the brother then disappears for like a whole three.
Yeah, he just like runs away after being given the very specific secret instructions. Go long,
right?
Which he interprets correctly as
turn around, headbutt
on
a
the
guy.
Signal, turn around, headbutt a guy, grab his gun, shoot him, grab onto the nearest metal thing so you don't get sucked up through the roof like everybody else. Because like I've said, go long, so you won't get sucked up through the roof.
But so here's the
that's what that means, by the way. I'll say go long,
yeah,
so you'll know not to get sucked up through the roof.
Right,
is what that's shorthand for.
Right,
but how does it that's not work. An equation that makes any sense?
No, not at all. So what he means is run away from the vacuum.
Right,
like go long, run away.
Right.
So, but here's the problem. So we see Blandy, Dr. Yorkshire, and Maggie Grace in a shopping mall in a like camping gear, sailing gear place.
Yeah.
And they're like putting on
harnesses
and stuff like that.
What about that? That sweet story where he goes, yeah, my dad used to take us fishing in a boat. It was a lot of fun. The end. That was just the whole story. That was it.
What about when he said, my dad used to have a boat and then looked up at the door of a maintenance truck that they had hanging on the wall? And you're like, what has that got to do with sailing? That's literally a thing that happened. Is he went, oh yeah, my dad used to have a boat and look up at a door
like,
of a truck.
They were like, it was gloriously... like drowning in non-sequitur. Right. People just kept saying things for
the
reason.
Sake of saying things. Yeah. I'm using this.
Sorry, yes, I'm sorry.
Setup.
I'm sorry.
Right. So they're in the mall. They've had a conversation with the bad guys.
Right.
They have decided they're going to swap the brother and the purple tip with the goatee for the code to open the vault. Because at this point, they're like, let's just give them the code. So. They also plan to, like, take out some of the bad guys. Like, there's rumbles that they're going to, like, plan something. But there's no indication of what that thing is other than she's like, are you sure this will work, right? And he's like, it's called a flip-de-doo or something. It's all to do with biometric pressure. I think it'll work, right?
Yeah.
But there's no... Normally, with a thing... when in a movie where you're going to be like, are you sure this is going to work? The only reason you have that dialogue in there is that the audience have been shown enough of the pieces of the puzzle so that in the back of their mind they're like, oh my god, they're not going to like use a lasso a truck and throw it at Hulk or whatever. Like, you've been put together, like, you've got Hulk, you've got the truck, you've got the lasso, and you've gone, oh, I bet that's what they're going to do, right?
Right.
We've seen none of it. We've seen none of it. They've just had a conversation where she said, are you sure it's going to work? He goes, biometric pressure. It's called the suck the whatever. And they're like, great. And they're in like a sailing store and he's talked about his dad. So then people we've never seen before, bad guys we've never seen before, show up with the brother and... are going like, there's four of us and we've got your brother and...
We've got the place around us. Even though this is a mall and there's three of us.
Right. and we see Dr. Yorkshire looking down at his watch where there's like a count-up of like the pressure. But like no... Like we don't know where that countdown's coming from. How is that information coming to his watch? Like pressure of what? Like...
Yeah. No, I'm waiting for you to get to a number. Is that a good number?
Is it a bad number? Is this going to work? Is this what he wants?
Look, believe it or not, I know very little about barometric pressure because I'm watching a film called The Hurricane Heist. I am not, in fact, a meteorological expert.
So then the brother and him are having this conversation, which again is all vague football terms. And it turns
out...
Don't
forget to go long. And the guy goes, shut up. He goes, stop giving your brother secret instructions.
Right.
And let's complete this transaction that, as far as I can tell, is going perfectly.
Or...
Nobody's got any secret plans here.
Yeah, maybe he goes, maybe I'll go long as well, then. If that's the advice.
What did you mean by go long?
So anyway, they then, like, pull something or pull the ceiling out of the place or something,
they
right?
They blow it up and shoots the ceiling. Shoot the glass ceiling.
They shoot the glass ceiling and there is a vortex created which sucks everyone in the mall up through the ceiling.
Yes.
Right. So that's the plan. First of all, idiotic plan. Completely. Secondly, absolutely no guarantee that this is going to keep his brother safe, which was the whole objective.
Yes.
They even have a thing... where he has called back to the base and gone, I need to make sure my brother's still alive. He talks to his brother. They say they love each other, blah, blah, blah.
Even if he'd said something like hang on to the quarterback or hang on, you know what I mean? Something that's like grab onto something, because at least that would make sense.
Right.
But not go long.
And we assume...
Because the guys who see the ceiling being blown up, they go, I better run towards that.
Right.
Surely, like, going motion away. Right. Like what they would be doing
so
naturally.
What then happens is that Maggie Grace and Dr. Yorkshire are apparently strapped by bungee cord to their ankles and get sucked up through the ceiling themselves. There is literally a shot where they are silhouetted against a grey stormy sky where they're flapping about like... those like blowy guys outside car showrooms, like above this mall.
What was
like
good?
It's unintentionally. Well, no, I don't know if it's intentionally or who knows what Rob Cohen's intentions are. But it's hilarious. I mean, it's hilarious. And it's not hilarious in a, like, oh my God, how ironic way. It's hilarious because it's absolutely hilarious. It's two people dangling around on a... First of all, you've no idea what you're watching, why you're watching it, or what's happening to anybody. But all of a sudden, your two lead actors are flapping about like...
Fortunately,
rubber people.
They do come down onto the roof.
Yeah.
In a way that's like, and how did that happen then? Because they were being sucked up through the thing.
Yeah.
And now then...
And they're able to get the thing off their ankles.
And now they're in the middle of a hurricane.
Yeah.
But that's not a thing anymore?
It's not a thing anymore.
Right.
And the brother has escaped. And even though when they go back to the brother's workshop, where he's like, oh, I'm sure that he'll be here. And they go into the workshop and the brother's not there. At no point does his brother worry about that.
No, like, you're right. He doesn't.
Three people get sucked up through the roof. Lots of people
die. No, he doesn't. They've got no idea what's happened.
They've got no idea what's happened to the brother. And at no point does he go, oh, my God, I hope he's okay. And I hope I didn't just suck my own brother up through a glass roof. Maybe I... Did I kill my brother?
Did I kill my brother using a hurricane? Which is the very thing...
That killed our dad.
I accused him of doing to our dad.
Yeah.
Which would be some kind of irony if I knew what that meant.
Right.
You're right. It's so... I mean...
But so what I'm saying is, There's no build-up.
No.
Right? There's payoff because you see the ceiling cave in and people get sucked up through it and you're like, ah, that's bananas. Right? Because someone had to sit down and go, well, maybe in a storm, there's like a suction vortex that if I break the glass roof
again,
for this thing...
Again, unemployed Bulgarian circus clowns are not experts in what would happen in a mall during a hurricane.
During a hurricane.
No, I read that. Fucking better have done, clown. Yeah. It's curtains for you. I did, I promise the sight is the sound.
Yeah, I read that if you blow up a glass roof in a mall, you will be sucked out of it at high speed.
All right.
Why would that be?
If any critics make any sarcastic comments about this sequence, I'm coming back for you.
So then, he's not worried about his brother at all. His brother then shows...
When does his brother come back?
A tidal wave that knocks over an enormous boat... And fucking hundreds of tankers and everything else come flooding into the town. And his brother just comes, like, rocking up on a little motorboat.
Oh, that's right. And also, like, that also seems to be part... Yeah, somehow they're trapped in a garden store.
Well, because they have a plan.
Oh, they've got, like, a car bomb plan.
They're going to load up... People need to see the face you're making. Yeah. Car bomb plan? Yeah, so this is the other thing, right? There were, like, cars strewn about this town, right? He has a winch on the back of his tank car thing, which all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he starts calling the Dominator or something.
Oh, he does about halfway through the movie,
halfway through the movie, just suddenly comes up with, well, we're not blowing up the Dominator. And she's like, go on, let me blow up the Dominator. And he's like, no. And then she's like, go on, the government will buy you more Dominators. Go on, let's blow up the Dominator.
Using the money that they're going to destroy because it's no longer legal tender.
And then he's like, oh, all right, we'll blow up the Dominator. And then they go to a garden centre and they're filling the Dominator up with fertiliser and stuff, and she makes some weird crack about Timothy McVeigh where you're meant to just be like, all right, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, that was like, hey, why don't I make a joke about it to a guy killed a whole load of people.
Yeah, a guy who was a federal terrorist.
He only needed, like, you know, fertiliser and he killed loads of people. Yeah.
By the way, weird-looking dodgy guy in the sixth row, let me give you the exact ingredients of a bomb. So they go do this, and then she is able to see that a tidal wave is coming, even though there's no indication of a tidal wave. She's able, much like he's able to see a storm.
She's able to look at a sky with a storm not in it.
She's able to be inside.
She's got to look at a window without a window.
There was no window. I don't know how she did it, but she was like, tidal wave, get down. And then somehow they survived, but the other guys didn't. Then the brother comes along in a boat, and then we carry on. But, like, it's that whole thing. There was no funny line. There was no... Yeah, it was all just stuff happened. Now, the stuff that happened was jolly good fun.
Yes. I think...
We're doing it a disservice, really, because it is...
No, we're not, because it's fucking ridiculous, and it wouldn't take anybody... You could have, like, one arm, half a brain...
Right.
And a pencil that was nearly down to the nub, and you could have made... the required improvements to the script.
You could have
that would have like made it a million times better with literally no effort.
You remember those when they felt...
By the way, the reason the one arm thing is he's trying to write on the script.
Right.
but it's on like a table or whatever, and it keeps moving. Keeps moving.
He can't. I get it. I understand. You remember when like they thought that fries weren't fun enough for children, so they made like alphabet fries? They tried to do alphabet spaghetti, but they did alphabet fries. You could probably spell out a better script using. I'm going to go with 3.5 bags of alphabet fries.
It really wouldn't take much because the point about it is, and this is what I kept thinking all the way through. This is what I meant, by the way, about, and I'm quite serious about watching it in Russian or French or any language that you care to learn, Italian, or that you like listening to. Italian is a nice language. Russian's a lovely language. Because the things they say have no bearing on anything. They're just designed because they loosely understand that in movies people need to talk. Right. They understand that's a thing.
Yeah.
But like what they say, they couldn't really give a fuck about.
No, nobody has
all the things. All the things that happen in the movie are really fun. And I was watching the movie again. If I could like not hear them,
right?
Not hear them, I would be enjoying this a lot more because it's fun. I really like the setup. I like the idea of like people like holding down a thing. I prefer it to be like more holding down rather than just like the heist happens and they have to get somebody out. That was kind of
right.
It feels like it'd be better to like trying to repel people, you know, from the facility, like while the storm is happening. Yeah, kind of thing. Maybe. Anyway, whatever. Not like they go away from the thing, they come back from the thing. They go away from the thing. Like, it's all like that thing.
Right. But the other thing is this, right?
But I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it.
Before the movie, we watched two of the upcoming Dwayne Johnson / The Rock trailers, right?
Both of which look awesome.
One of them is called Skyscraper, which is about the tallest building in the entire world, and my family come along, and I'm a security guard.
That looks super generic, but quite fun.
I'm a security guard who only has one leg, but I'm going to
I'm
like...
I'm telling you that was Johnson's idea.
Yeah.
Like, they went, would you be in it? Only if I can have one leg. What did The Rock say? He'll be in it. That's fantastic. No, wait. He wants to do the action movie with one leg.
Yeah,
that's the idea.
Yeah. So
that's how we get The Rock.
And then the other one was the...
What about Dr. Yorkshire? Is he available? I hear he's hot in Bulgarian circles.
In Bulgarian circles. And then the other one we saw was Rampage, where he...
But that looked genuinely really good.
Yeah, where he is apparently befriended an albino gorilla who then touches a magic stick that makes him enormous. And then the enormous gorilla goes rampaging through the city. And then there's like mutant animals that are also enormous. And so The Rock and his pal the gorilla have to fight mutant animals in a city. Which, by the way, I'm so looking forward to on a level I can't even explain. But the reason for bringing it up is this. The reason why your Rocks, Vin Diesels, Stathams, Schwarzeneggers, Stallones of the world, right, work in films like this, right? And the reason why you can say, oh, he's a chef now, but he used to be an assassin or whatever, right? Is because they themselves are so, like, ludicrous and larger than life.
Yeah.
That if you have a scene where, I don't know, The Rock has to, like, eat part of a building to save his child, you totally buy it. Like, you totally buy that The Rock can, like, or he has to, better example would be that after a drone has been shot down, he rips the gun off a drone and just walks along holding an enormous, massive drone gun, firing, like, planes out of the air with it. You buy it because look at him. Like, he's insane. Like, there's nothing normal about him, right? They are living embodiments of lunacy, and therefore I want to see them do ludicrous things. Like, one of the things we said about San Andreas is that at no point did he use, I don't know, his forehead as a ramp for trucks, or at no point did he pull the San Andreas fault back together, and at no point did he headbutt a building. Like, all these things were missing from that movie.
Not only could,
right,
should have happened.
Right. He didn't, I don't know, jump the San Andreas fault in a, I don't know, tricycle. Like,
he just moped and he whinged.
Moped.
Not whinged the San Andreas fault back together, mate.
There was literally a bit in San Andreas where he came up to the edge of the fault line, looked down at the thing and went back to a car. Which I'm like, that's not what he does. He either jumps it or gets back in the car and
punches it.
Or
until
he punches
it,
it stops
a bigger fault.
Or he pulls it back together again or something, right? So... while that's the reason why you need people of that ilk in a movie like Hurricane Heist. And the fact, and the reason why, and it's not just that Dr. Yorkshire is such a bad actor, and he is a catastrophically bad actor. I mean, there's bits at the beginning where he's meant to be like slightly jocular, and I thought he was having a stroke. Like, his eyebrows are moving, his mouth is moving, he puts pauses in weird bits. Because he wants to do that bit where he wants to do, right, you know, in like Gone in 60 Seconds, where Nick Cage goes, like, waggles his fingers and goes, let's ride, or whatever, like, and then they all go off and ride, right? And Nick Cage can pull it off, but 99% of people can't pull it off, right? That, like, he was trying to do that. Like, he was trying to be like, well, how do I deliver this line in, like, a spunky American way? And it's like, you don't, because you're Dr. Yorkshire.
And, also, this barely qualifies as a line.
Right. Like, the line...
Let's ride is, like, something. Right. It's like, right. Nick Cage looks at a line. You can tell Nick Cage, like, I'm looking forward to the bit where I get to say, let's ride,
right,
in a movie about car thieves.
Right.
Right?
Whereas...
I'm really going to give that one the beans. I'm going to give that one the Cage beans.
I'm going to uncage.
I'm going to uncage the beans.
The Cage beans.
I'm going to uncage the beans.
I'm going to uncage the beans.
That is excellent.
But so, but in this one, you know, people have to work with lines like "Red ribbon, my ass."
Red ribbon, my ass.
Which
she's all tied up in a red. There's no metaphorical or actual ribbon anywhere. What are you talking about?
No. If he'd said "neat little bow," that would have been fine. Because neat little bow is something.
Yeah.
You tie a neat little bow on the end of a Christmas present or top of a Christmas present, and that's fine.
In Bulgaria, presumably, for clowns.
For clowns, it's red ribbons.
Red ribbons.
I don't even think it's clowns. I think it's like disenfranchised Bulgarian postal workers. It's not even clowns. Like, clowns have too much energy and creativity. There would have at least been a sequence where, I don't know, he picked up a thing and hit someone with it, and it made a squeaking noise.
But that's the thing, right? Let's say, for the sake of argument, right, you make this. This is why sometimes I think, let me put this to you, right? Sometimes I think producers get a bad name, because I think that sometimes they really do know what the fuck they're doing.
Right.
This film, if anything, suffers from having, as far as I can tell, a billion producers.
783, right?
So there's no guy saying, what's this fucking script?
Right.
Where's my fucking... Like, the whole point about doing a movie like this is go out, right, and find me, like, a charismatic... leading man who's like 10 years past his sell-by date, so he'll work for practically nothing,
right,
but he's got like charisma dripping off him. So Cusack or Cage or fucking whoever, Dennis, right, Quaid, literally anybody.
Quaid would have been great, he'd have been
a brilliant meteor, and it's like he's a meteorologist, so he can be as ancient as you want.
right,
okay, he's got to jump a few trucks, but that's fine.
Right.
That's what I need.
Literally, I know, Albert Finney would have been better.
I'm going to call up the guy, the Oscar-winning screenwriter that I know,
right,
who's got a spare half an hour this afternoon, and for $2,000, he'll polish this up into something that's like got a few jokes, right, in it, and it like bombs.
Or I don't know, go down to the local newspaper and then you make the vendor fucking, and get him.
And then you make it, and that's it. You just you get that guy for nothing. For the same as Dr. Yorkshire.
Yeah,
you could have got. Fuck, I don't know.
Even if it was a bunch of, like, mad British character actors.
Yeah, that would have been
sitcom.
Fine, too. But, I don't know.
The cast of The Far Show. I'm not even kidding. Like, you could have got the cast of The Far Show to have made this movie.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
And I don't mean, like, comically. I mean, they play
it
straight.
No, they play straight ahead. Paul Whitehouse is the meteorologist.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been really good.
Right. The taller northern guy who plays Monkfish.
Yeah.
He would have been amazing. What's his name?
I can't remember. That's someone such a
Day,
good idea.
Someone Day, something Day.
Charlie Day? Simon Day. Simon Day.
Simon Day. I loved him. Monkfish, Detective Monkfish. I loved him.
Higson, Higson would be like the like meteorologist guy in the Thingamajig. That was such a great idea.
Yeah. But no, I'm just saying, you could literally go...
Yeah, it doesn't take much. But I'm saying, anyway, my point is that back in the 80s, with your Arnie's or your Stones or whatever, that's what you do. You'd go, I've optioned this book where there's like a heist and a hurricane, right? And you take this like mess of a script and you find yourself a slightly aging, you know, character to make it. This is what Bruckheimer would have done. You give it to a guy you know who can polish it up, you know, with your connections.
Yeah.
And like that single producer's voice at the head of everything.
Right.
Like, the one that's deciding how this movie's going to be is how you end up with, like, a half-decent action film that is not a work of art, but hits the right notes, gets the bums on his seats, and makes sure that if you've spent 50 million, you're going to get 100 million back, right?
But I will say...
It's just fucking math.
Right. I will say this about it, though. There was a point where, probably about 30, maybe 40 minutes in, where we hadn't really had a lot of action yet.
No.
There'd been some, but not really. That I was getting a little worried. That I was getting worried that it was all going to be purple shirt and grizzly office bloke and, you know, whiny British hacker guy. And they were all just going to be, like, awful for 90 minutes. And I was like, oh, there was a bit where I was like, okay, they need to blow something up, and they need to blow it up, like, yesterday, because if something doesn't blow
that's
up right
true.
Now...
Yeah.
So, but then, there was that whole sequence where, like, where trucks were just driving all over the road, and one of them, like, binged a building slightly and then blew up, and that blew up the entire building. And at that point, I was like, oh, okay. And then, you know, they had to bring the tower down. Like, that was... Okay, that was an example of a good set piece, right?
Yeah.
So, you go... You've got the hackers in the building, and if the tower comes down, they don't get all the numbers. And if they don't get all the numbers, then they can't break into the vault, right?
Right. It was simple. You understood what was at stake, what was happening.
Right. You have them pull up in the street. You have them... It's a gale, and everything's going crazy and blowing around, but, like, he's got to climb on top of this building and, you know, wrap his winch wire around the tower and bring it down so that they can't get into the vault, right? And then halfway through this whole procedure... guys with guns show up, right? So you've got a whole built-in thing, right? Something's got to come down that's going to stop them getting the thing, da-da-da-da-da. And they did it, like, really well. Like, yeah. It was really well set up. And then, although it's utterly ridiculous and ludicrous to even assume to have a gunfight in a hurricane because the bullet... Like, it's not like bullets are like, hurricanes, like, bullets literally travel through the air, so therefore they would be blown all over the place and rendered probably useless, right? But there was a nice sequence, like, she was trying to get... Once they pulled the thing down, she was like, oh, we're still hooked on, can't drive away yet, so she has to get rid of the winch wire, right? While she's doing that, he's like, oh, I'll hold them off. And there was this really cool bit where, like, the car is being blown down the street and he's hiding behind the car.
Yeah, that was cool. There could have been a bit more of that. It was like, wait, is that what he's doing? Because if that's what he's doing, that's cool. And then it was kind of over.
Right. But then there was, like, this is where I don't understand it. There was a sack full of hubcaps.
Well, that's quite common in Alabama.
Is it just sack fulls of hubcaps?
Yeah.
But anyway...
Just on Main Street, on an abandoned Main Street. Hanging bag of hubcaps.
He got this and he was hiding behind the thing, and he was flinging them out, like, into the gale.
Probably in Bulgaria. Yeah. Like, hanging bag of hubcaps are, like, do you know what I mean? Like, the equivalent of the town cinema. Come out, and they just stand in the square looking as they, like, rotates gently and winking in the sun.
I used to play a bass for hanging bags of hubcaps. That was my college band. But no, and he was flinging them, and one, like, embedded itself into the chest of the bad guy. And you're like, that's a decent enough sequence. So, like, that was pleasurable to me. Like, that was a well-built sequence that had a beginning, middle, and end.
Plenty to like about it.
But so my worry was assuaged by that sequence. And then I have to say that once that happened, it didn't really slow down. I mean,
it's balderdash. There's enough. And this is the thing, right?
And it wasn't just like, oh, we'll stick all the action in the last 15 minutes and have a crappy 90 minutes.
No,
it was like 30, 40 crappy minutes and then another 50, 60... You know, watchable hokum.
You're watching a film called The Hurricane Heist. What the fuck do you
watchable
expect from
hokum,
us? Yeah.
No, interspersed with some urinary jokes.
The only thing...
That is so weird that
it was super weird. But let's face it, right? The only reason this is on the cinema is you can make a good trailer out of it.
Right.
And you might be able to fool people into thinking that if you like Fast and Furious, this is kind of the same thing.
Right. But can I also say something? I am so happy that a film like this is in the cinema.
Yes, long may it continue. If there's this, these rock movies, like I'm all for that. Like,
right,
just keep churning them out. Like,
but they don't.
Silly
but
action.
But I will say this.
The world is such a horrible place.
Right, but I'll also say this. if 35 million gets you this, right? And it's one of the reasons why I kind of want this to make 100 million. I know it won't, but I kind of want it to, because if 35 million plus, let's say, another 15 million to get a budget Statham and a couple of character actors, right? For the sequel. Like, someone you actually want to watch, not these, like, TV knockoffs. But, like, someone you actually want to watch. I don't know who the budget Statham is, but look, that dude who just did the Assassin movie, what's his name, from Vampire Hunter, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. He's also in Preacher, I think. But whoever it is, like, your Luke Evans or whatever, like, one of those guys.
Right.
He's not Statham level, right? But he's fine. He was fine as the bad guy in Fast and Furious 6 or whatever it was. Like, him. You know what I mean? Like, an extra 10 mil buys you him and a couple of character actors.
No, I'm with you. So I mean, what I'm saying is, I
would like to prove, like, if 35 million gets you this movie, to me, that's, like, to me, the money's on the screen. That 35 mil. Like, I see a whole bunch of stuff
out. I just think you could be, I think you could be canny about it. I think they, when they...
But it needs a $35 million movie to make $100 million for them to make more of them. Whereas otherwise, they're only going to assume that they have to spend $250 million making the next Fast and Furious movie rather than going, well, we could make it on a budget for $35 million and maybe make $100 million.
Okay. Like, the problem is that when you've got a film like this, it's being made by 82 production houses. A lot of them are making them, it's like tax write-offs
and stuff like that.
They're not even necessarily expected to get the money back. It's by investing their money in this project and they get X, Y, you know, it's all like financial shit.
Right.
And that's what leads to not having a single voice at the top of it.
Right, and I imagine...
Even if it's a cynical money-making voice, you know.
Right.
That's why it's all like, oh, this is fine, right?
But it's a surefire bet, because I would be very surprised if this doesn't double, at least double its budget worldwide. Not necessarily in the States, but worldwide.
Well, I imagine these days... I mean, I don't know about double the budget, but I think it...
You need that to kind of break
even. I think it's all about...
Although they didn't advertise it that much. We only saw it because we go to the movies every week.
Yeah, that's true.
I haven't seen any...
No, I saw a trailer for it on, like, online somewhere. I can't remember what I was looking at, but...
You know, because the big problem with the studios is the reason why they have to double their budget to make any profit is because on top of whatever the budget of the movie was, they add an extra 50 for marketing. Yeah. This didn't have huge marketing.
No, I haven't really seen any. I've seen, like, a couple of posters for it. And, yeah, like, I mean, once on a website, it was, like, pretty big website.
Right. But I think, you know, films like The Mechanic 2, which were utter shash as well, prove that if you've got a passable lead and stuntmen who know what they're doing and some idea how to structure an action sequence, you can pretty much get away with it. It does help if you have the odd line that someone can kind of give the welly to, but
I agree with you, because if nothing else, what you're talking about is there's the place where there's obviously a market for this stuff, right, is, you know, Netflix or Amazon or whatever, right? Like, they want their dumb, silly action films that people like to watch on a Sunday afternoon, right? They need that. They, you know, throw a stick and you'll find, like, an earnest, you know, arty film that costs no money, like, or a found footage horror film. Like, they're not short of these, but what they don't have is, like, watchable, fun, blockbuster popcorn movies, right?
Right.
Preferably they didn't cost them very much money. So they want films like this, right? That is a popcorn blockbuster movie for, what, a tenth of the price, right? So if there's a business argument you made to make your 35 million, sell it to Netflix for whatever, and Netflix is in a, you know, Netflix here and Amazon there, you know, in different territories, whatever, because they've all got different deals with everybody, right? Probably make your money back just doing that, frankly. You know, 5 mil here, 4 mil there, whatever. And then it's like, well, we'll throw it in the cinema because maybe it's a hit, right? Because, you know, you've only got to look at what Our Trouble. We go to the cinema, we're like, it's like either the Marvel movie that's been out for 3 months, you know, some Oscar, you know, Oscar-nominated garbage that nobody wants to fucking see. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it seems like there's nothing in between. It's either massively huge blockbusters.
Right.
Or tiny, unwatchable, arty nonsense.
Right.
That's it. And then, like, the whole, like, I just want to tell my brother to watch a silly movie, which is what we want every week. It's not that.
Right.
But if you can find a way to make those movies for a
$35 million, and you could make a, that could be a fucking industry for you. That could be a cottage industry, no question.
Right.
Anyway, but I enjoyed it, and I'm really, really glad I got to see it with you.
And I cannot wait to see the Rock and an albino gorilla.
The Rampage looks really fun. Yeah. Because not only, yeah, what was fun, it didn't only look just like the sequences looked fun, there were a few lines that were like, it's actually like maybe quite witty, and there's going to be like a few funny lines in it.
But that's what I mean. So that's it. And we had a really good discussion about it, and I have to say, like, the positive thing that comes out of the Hurricane Heist is that I want silly B movies.
Yes,
that are fun to watch.
If they keep making them, I will keep seeing them in the cinema. That's what I will use my movie pass for.
Yeah,
no question.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, man.
Thank you. But I want everyone to go see it because I want it to be a massive hit. And then I want you to rent it on Netflix when it comes out.
And change the audio to Russian.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be so much better if they were just like, if either or mute it.
No, I think Russian, because you might pick something up. You can kind of admire the language.
Right.
It's just like, you don't need it. It's like totally surprising. How would you... like a weird, fun experience.
But how would you translate the mesmerizing gobbledygook that the British hacker says? He literally says, like, we have to... I can't even make it up. Like, we have to... finger the bibble ruster in order to reroute the triple quantum.
Maybe they just like put in brackets, like maybe they don't even bother dubbing it. They put like lazy technological garbage. You know
what I mean? Well, what was so funny is the movie starts and it was in that like the professional weather center, whatever it is, like, which apparently is a dark basement somewhere with a bunch of screens and some people who are having like infighting between who's a better meteorologist. And the woman turns around and she's like, I think we've got to, like, hoist up the giggle nipples and whatever it is.
Can we get the check? Thank you very much.
You know, and twist the Garty bar fast or whatever.
Right.
And I was like, oh, my goodness, already the incomprehensible gibberish. Then we cut to the hacker and he said a whole bunch of stuff.
That scene is honestly, you have to watch the movie for that one. It cuts to him. He's for like there's a whole like long sentence of like utter incomprehensible garbage, and then just cuts away from him.
Techno babble. And he may as well have gone. She may as well have come over to him and gone, where are we? We're breaking into the thing. Techno babble. Techno babble. Techno babble. A babble. Techno. Techno babble. And she gone.
Cut.
Right. Okay. Walked away.
It was super.
He could
weird.
Have been giving the instructions on how to make a paella in Swahili for all it mattered.
Well, I enjoyed the shit out of it. I'm really glad we went to see it, man. And I for the first time in ages, with those trailers in front of the movie, I'm like, I'm quite hopeful for 20. Maybe this is another like byproduct of the crazy world we're living in.
Yeah.
But people are like, I don't want to look in the mirror anymore. Just take me away from this horror. Do you know what I mean? I'm all for it.
What was the animal in? Oh, he goes, of course the wolf can fly.
Yeah, of course the wolf can fly.
Was it a wolf?
It was a wolf. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he knows how to deliver a line, The Rock.
Yeah.
Of course the wolf could fly.
The wolf could fly.
You know?
That was so good. I can't wait to see Rampage. It better not let me down like San Andreas. At some point, he better get the alligator and, like, even though the alligator is a giant block-sized alligator, he better, like, tear a tooth out.
I don't think that movie's going to let us down.
No.
I really don't.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Time.
You've been listening to the After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross. Support us at patreon.com/aftermoviediner or I'll punch you in the teats. Rate and review us on iTunes, Earthling.